过去一些结合器在这三月份的地区确定过后面的结合器中好些是在结合器里面的什么情况能够分成两把国际上的系列也是这些吧因为那里我都开始学了那另外这把这些地方就给中国这边比中国这边小国人做目的就中国这边小国人另外这边地方都他们国些那他们国他国人我知道咱国的另外一点的地方他国国些这他国人觉得他们就可能机构的这些上班的这个规矩规矩的这个机构的这些但我最近把这些来了你要我把这些那你帮我呢那他把这些做过的也是他把这些你国的这些做过的那你那时候给他这个是南京市的也是我的南京的我的南京的我也是他把你国的话就去了
嗯 good afternoon yesterday or yesterday evening we looked at the Four Noble Truths. So the very first teaching of Lord Buddha in Varanasi was on the Four Noble Truths, where he taught the truth of suffering, the truth of origin, the truth of cessation, and the truth of paths. So this was the very first teaching from the Buddha. So we spoke last night about what these four noble truths are, so just in brief. So the first is true sufferings. And what true sufferings relates to are our own aggregates, our physical and mental aggregates. However, these we do not yet see as suffering. We have not come to know that these are in the nature of suffering. So therefore, the Buddha taught that this very first noble truth, this truth of suffering, needs to be known. So what needs to be known is that our aggregates, our physical and mental aggregates, are in the nature of suffering. When we come to realize this, or we come to understand this to a degree that has an impact on our mind, we'll want to know, so what is the cause? Why do we have these suffering aggregates? Why are we in this position? And then we go to the second noble truth, which is the cause of the first, and that is true origins, the origin of suffering. And the origin of our suffering is the contaminated karma that we accumulate through our afflicted minds, so karma and afflictions. So when you hear true origins, we should understand that this refers to karma and afflictions. So this is, the Buddha said, is to be abandoned. The first noble truth is to be known, the second is to be abandoned. Because when we abandon these afflictions completely and therefore no longer accumulate contaminated karma, we then attain a state liberated from suffering. And that leads us to the third noble truth, the truth of cessation. And these cessations eventually become liberation. Liberation from suffering or nirvana. How does one then achieve the state of liberation? How does one achieve the individual cessations that is a true cessations? That comes through practicing true paths or developing mental paths within oneself. So the third noble truth is to be realized, true cessations, and the fourth noble truth, that of paths, is to be practiced. So that's what we looked at last night. Today we're going to look at refuge. So we're going to talk about what the meaning of refuge is. So literally it means going for protection, or going for, sometimes translated as going for safe harbor. But literally, going for protection is the literal translation of refuge. So we're going to look at that today, what the benefits are and how one goes for refuge. When we hear about the objects of refuge, and there are three, this is the Buddha refuge, the Dharma refuge, and the Sangha refuge.
Sangha
So this then is referred to in the refuge verse that we recite at the start of teachings. So we recited it tonight in this afternoon in Tibetan, but in English it's, I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. So here we see the three jewels mentioned, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, or the English translation of the Sanskrit, Supreme Assembly. So let's then look at the three jewels individually. So the first one, the Buddha jewel. So what is meant by a Buddha? So a Buddha is a being who has developed their mind to the fullest capacity possible, as well as purified their mind completely. So all the afflicted minds and all the faults have been completely purified from a mind of a being called the Buddha. So all faults have been completely abandoned. And then together with this, the mind has been developed to its fullest capacity. All qualities have been completely and fully developed. So this is what is meant by a Buddha, and we go for refuge to the Buddha jewel, a being who has fully developed all good qualities and completely abandoned all faults. What is meant then by abandoning all faults is that Buddha has completely eliminated all afflicted minds, so minds such as anger, such as attachment or desire, such as jealousy and pride. All of these have been completely abandoned together with their seeds, so that none remain at all. And how did the Buddha come to do this? Well, we looked at this in the previous classes when we spoke about how to meditate on emptiness, or what is understood by emptiness and how to meditate on it and give rise to the wisdom realizing emptiness. So this meditating on emptiness, giving rise to the wisdom realizing emptiness, is how a Buddha managed to abandon all their afflicted minds, all their faults, together with their seeds. The Sangha jewel, this refers to the beings who are engaging in the study and the practice of the Buddha Dharma, of the teachings of the Buddha. But not just all practitioners of the Buddha Dharma, but in particular those who are Arya beings or noble beings, those who have come to realize emptiness directly, those are referred to as the Sangha jewel.
Mm-hmm.
The Buddha Jewel was the founder Buddha who has abandoned all faults and developed all good qualities. Those who are successfully training in the teachings of the Buddha are studying and developing them within their own minds and have come to realize emptiness directly and attain the Arya paths. These are those practitioners of the Sangha Jewel. Then the third jewel is the Dharma Jewel. So what the Dharma Jewel doesn't refer to Dharma as we normally hear with the teachings of the Buddha, but it actually refers to the realizations in the minds of these Arya beings. And in particular, so these Arya beings have been studying and training in the teachings of the Buddha and given rise to realizations in their continuum. And they have actually come to the level now where they are abandoning the afflicted minds. So the afflictions have varying levels of subtlety. So when they start to abandon the coarser levels, they do so through attaining true cessations. This is what we heard about yesterday in the Four Noble Truths. So they're attaining true cessations, and that realization in the continuum of these beings, this is what is referred to as the Dharma Jewel. So now we've looked at the three objects of refuge, or the three objects that we go to for protection. So if we take the literal translation of refuge, it's going for protection. So the three objects that we go to for protection are the Buddha Jewel, the Dharma Jewel, and the Sangha Jewel. So why do we go to them for protection? So with a mind of trust, with a strong belief that the three jewels have the skill and the ability to protect us from suffering. With that trust, with that motivation, we then go for protection to these three jewels. And that is going for refuge, going for protection to the qualities that have the ability to protect us from suffering. So going for refuge is something that, as Buddhists, we all do. But to go to the Three Jewels for protection from suffering with sincerity, in a manner that moves our heart, then we have to have gone through two preceding steps beforehand. In meditation, we need to have understood what is meant by suffering. And we need to have understood what is meant by suffering to the extent that we've given rise to the strong wish to be liberated from suffering, to completely destroy suffering. So this is one preceding practice that we need to do. And then secondly, having given rise to the strong wish to be liberated from suffering completely, to abandon and destroy suffering completely, we'll think, who has the ability to do this? And then our mind turns to the Three Jewels. So when we've developed first a strong wish to abandon suffering completely, to be liberated from suffering completely, and having strong faith, strong trust that the Three Jewels have the ability to eliminate suffering, then we wholeheartedly go for protection to the Three Jewels. So those two preceding steps are required. Without these, when one goes for refuge, it's just mere words. So just to briefly recap then, the Three Jewels, is the Buddha Jewel, which is the founder Buddha, the teacher of the Buddha Dharma. The Sangha Jewel then are the Arya beings who have developed realizations within their continuum and are practicing the Buddha Dharma. And then the Dharma Jewel, these are the true cessations in their continuum, their realizations of emptiness that have led to cessations of suffering. And again, these cessations are of varying degree of subtlety, matching to the degree of subtlety of the afflictions that have been abandoned. So to understand then refuge more clearly, we take an analogy. So we heard a moment ago that the starting point is to come to understand suffering, and in particular, understand it in relation to ourselves. So coming to understand that our physical mental aggregates are pervaded by suffering, we then come to understand that we can be likened to a patient, someone who is ill, someone who is suffering from a powerful disease. Then, with that understanding in mind, we will go to a skilled doctor, to the most skilled doctor that we can find, and that, in this context, is likened then to the Buddha Jewel. And when we see this most skilled of doctors, then he or she will examine us and will entrust us to nurses to take care of us. And those nurses then are skilled in taking care of us, in supporting us, and then assisting us, in particular in helping us to follow the advice of the doctor, especially if the advice requires diligence and consistency over a period of time. Then the advice of the doctor is to put in practice the Buddha's teachings and to meditate and study on the teachings. And then this can be likened then to the Dharma jewel, because the Dharma jewel is the medicine that actually eliminates our suffering. And here, so what, remembering the Dharma jewel are the realizations of true cessations. So these are the true cessations are actually what eliminates our suffering. So the Dharma jewel is these true cessations, because it's through applying the practice and giving rise to these true cessations that we eliminate our suffering, that we become free progressively in stages from our illness. So if you think of in our own lives, if we're not feeling so well, and we think, oh, maybe I should go to the doctor. Well, we don't necessarily go. It tends only to be if we're concerned. We think, oh, this may be something important. Because if we don't have some stronger motivation, we're quite likely just to ignore this, to say, oh, I'm busy another time. And it's similar in terms of our approach to the Buddha Dharma. The first step is to come to really understand our situation. And to understand our situation, we need to understand suffering well. When we come to understand suffering well, we see how our physical and our mental aggregates are pervaded by suffering. When we have this understanding clearly to us, so that it has an impact on our mind, it thereby will change our behavior. And it will propel us towards the most skilled doctor we can find with the most skilled assistance. In other words, our mind will turn towards the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha because of our understanding of the nature of suffering in relation to ourselves. So that first step is particularly important because it turns us towards going to the three jewels for, say, protection. And then within the three jewels, when we have this mind of turning towards them for safe protection, we will know that we'll have the trust that the teachings of the Buddha that lead to the attainment of the Dharma jewel, these true cessations, this is what we need to strive for diligently, wholeheartedly, over whatever length of time is required, because we know that that medicine alone, is effective.
Mm.
So if one comes to a recognition of one's true condition, then if one comes to recognition of one's current condition, but has no faith in the skilled in doctors before one, even if they are skilled, one won't go and visit that doctor. And similarly, if one is under the care of a doctor, but has no faith in those who are assisting the doctor, the skilled nursing staff, then one will not follow their advice, will not follow their guidance. So similarly, if one doesn't have faith in the Buddha and the Buddha Dharma, then one will not even approach the Buddha or approach the teachings of the Buddha. And if one doesn't have faith in the Sangha Jewel, then one will not entrust oneself to their advice, to their care. So the result of that would be that one wouldn't even seek our teachings. Or if one does, maybe a friend takes one, or one feels compelled, or one receives teachings. But because the trust isn't sufficient, one will not study those teachings and come to understand them well and commit them to memory and not meditate on them. And without studying and without meditating, then it's not possible to give rise to the to achieve the Dharma jewel itself. It's not possible to overcome suffering.
Kom jenis jauh boleh sebegini, dan dia ya, ane sanjung sunyi cuit ya, ane nyanyi ke jangan ke dunia ni boleh. Ini jangan orang ini, ane kadang-kadang cikgu ini dia cerah lah, kom dia kata, ane sama tangan ni, sangat singgah boleh. Sebab jadi ni tak, ini tak boleh sunyi macam ni sebegini. Ini tempat boleh sebegini jujur ni, ini tempat macam ni, tadi tu lagu orang ni ini ni nak tak kasih sebab ni dia ya, orang cik dunia ni mal, dunia macam ni orang cik mal. जवान क्या करो से कौन जो धुआं था कौन जो नहीं धुआं था कौन जो क्यों करे सब निवा इसे तमाच बोलते हैं कोरे से जिम्मेदार दे रहे इसे तेरे मुझे ना न साजी के माल लग जाते हैं माल लोकप्रिय जीव को है लोकप्रिय को है जैसा लोकप्रिय जीव लोकप्रिय जी सिंह को है जैसा लोकप्रिय जी ए
This is really a crucial point in terms of refuge, because without strong trust, one will not turn to the three jewels for protection, because one will not trust that they can protect one. However, on the other hand, if one does have stable trust, one will turn to the teachings of the Buddha and will listen to the teachings, study the teachings, and come to see what the faults are through the teachings. The teachings identify the faults, the teachings identify what to meditate on so as to abandon faults. But to engage in such training, one needs to have stable trust, first to receive the teachings and secondly to study them and apply them. And this then comes from understanding that the Buddha taught from his own experience. He taught the path that he himself practiced to achieve these realizations. So therefore, it's imperative that one has stable trust so that one turns for protection from suffering to the three jewels.
You
may be wondering then why we always refer to three jewels, because it's not as if there's only ever been one Buddha. There are countless Buddhas. Similarly, with Arya beings, there are countless Arya beings. And as we've heard in terms of the Dharma jewel being true cessations, we heard that these come in levels. So there are many true cessations. So then how come we're talking about these three numbers, this number three, as if there were only one of each? So whilst they are limitless beings who have developed their minds to their fullest capacity and purified their minds completely and thereby have attained enlightenment, all of those Buddhas grouped together are referred to as the Buddha jewel. And likewise, whilst there are many beings training and who have realized emptiness directly, these beings all together get grouped as the Sangha jewel. All these Arya beings together are grouped as the Sangha jewel. And similarly, there are many true cessations and true paths. All these combined together are called the Dharma jewel. So therefore, we talk about three jewels. We don't talk about more, we don't talk about less. Three jewels. When one goes for refuge, then going for refuge comes with certain commitments or trainings that one needs to engage in. In all forms of life, one doesn't start out skilled or an expert. One needs to train in a particular sequence. So if someone, for example, has a wish to become a skilled sports person or a dancer or a singer or in a particular profession such as science, well, one isn't born world class. One first needs to have a wish, then find a skilled teacher and train sequentially. So this is certainly the case in the world, and it's also the case with our own inner development. So in terms of our own inner development, we need to find a skilled teacher, and then through relying on them and through putting into practice the training and the advice that they give, we will be able to develop our minds sequentially and progress in this way in stages to the stage where we're completely free from all suffering. So this comes from, as we heard, from first of all understanding suffering and understanding how our aggregates are pervaded by suffering and understanding to the extent that it has an impact on our minds so that our behavior changes. Then from the trust that comes from this, we go for protection to the three jewels. We go for refuge to the three jewels. And with such a mind, we'll willingly, wholeheartedly want to receive the training, want to receive precepts so that we can train our minds and develop our minds, because we'll know that that is how we overcome suffering and achieve states of lasting happiness. So it's for this reason that we should, or this motivation, that we need to engage in training in the precepts of refuge. The Buddha taught the very first step, as we've been hearing this afternoon, is to think about the sufferings of samsara and to come to understand how cyclic existence is pervaded by suffering, how there is no peace to be found within samsara at all. This is the first step. The reason that one needs to start by thinking about suffering is, to understand the reason why we need to start thinking about suffering, we take an analogy we can understand from everyday life. So if someone is experiencing a lot of problems in their life relating to alcohol, perhaps through drinking too much, they've experienced some illness, at the very least waking up with hangovers, or they have experienced it when they drink too much, the way they communicate with others is not so gentle, and also through drinking too much, it impacts on their ability to work. So there clearly are faults they are clearly experiencing problems in relation to their relationship with alcohol. But if they continue to see alcohol as something that just brings joy and happiness to their life, and then when they're feeling a bit down, well, the solution is to have a few more drinks, or if they're struggling to sleep, well, then to have a few more drinks, then seeing alcohol as only beneficial, despite these other effects, they will keep drinking. They will have no wish to stop. They will make many excuses to keep drinking. On the other hand, if they think about that same object, their relationship with alcohol, in a different way, and focus on the faults that follow from indulging, then they will see alcohol as something that they need to abandon, something that only harms them. When that mind is developed and that mind is strong, they will be able to turn away from indulging in alcohol. Similar to the example of a person's relationship with alcohol, and to abandon it, they need to focus on their actual relationship or the actual effect that the relationship with alcohol has. So similarly, we need to look at cyclic existence, or look at the experience that we have in the world. So we tend to see cyclic existence or samsara as somewhere pleasurable. Hence, we're quite happy. We have some problems, some good days, some bad days, but generally, we think things are okay. But if we start to look in detail, we come to see that cyclic existence is pervaded by faults, it's pervaded by suffering, and that there is no lasting peace to be found anywhere. So if we look at the world in general, we can very easily see problems. There's warfare, there's epidemics and severe illness, natural disasters, and these all come about with unwished for. No one asks for warfare, no one asks for an epidemic or natural disaster to come, but they just naturally arise. And then if you look at interpersonal relationships, here we also see that situations are very fluid and can easily change in negative directions. Friends become enemies, people deceive each other, cheat each other, take advantage of others. So when we look at some detail and we look at the situation of the world and our own experience, we see that there is no lasting peace to be found. And everything is in constant nature of suffering and change. And if we look then also at our own situation, our physical and mental aggregates like we spoke about last night, we see that Our body too, even if we're sitting here right now, we're a little bit comfortable, we're saying, oh, everything's fine, I'm not ill, and I can sit here comfortably for a while. We know that at one point, our back will ache, our legs will ache, and we'll need to get up. We may be feeling healthy now, but we may well have an undiagnosed illness. But we also know that throughout our life and through people that we know, illness does come. And it comes in an unannounced way and unwanted times. And the cause of illness is, an illness and death is a variety of things. You can just eat the wrong kind of food, or just driving home, one can have an accident. These things happen so very easily. So thinking about this in detail, the situation of the world in general, situation between beings, as well as within ourselves, our physical situation, as well as our mental situation, we come to an understanding that samsara is pervaded by suffering and there is no lasting peace to be found anywhere. When one comes to see this clearly in the sense that it has an impact on one's mind and thereby changes one's behavior, a strong wish will arise within oneself to emerge from the suffering situation. In other words, this mind of renunciation, or this mind to definitely emerge from the sufferings of samsara, this will arise in a way that's powerful and has an impact on our way of thinking. So those who were here last night will see a clear link between what we've just been discussing and what we covered last night. So in the very first teaching that Lord Buddha gave, which is recorded in the sutra of the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, he taught the Four Noble Truths, of which the first is the truth of suffering. And he said, suffering is to be known. And now we've just covered why suffering needs to be known. Because if one understands that the whole of samsara and the beings within samsara are pervaded by suffering, one will no longer aspire to remain in samsara, because nowhere is seen as possessing, no rebirth or no being is seen as possessing lasting peace or lasting happiness within samsara. And if one comes to understand that, then one wants to understand the second noble truth, the cause. Where does this suffering come from? And when one understands the cause, one will want to know how to abandon this cause or destroy this cause, and thereby attain liberation, to definitely emerge from suffering and attain liberation. So this is what we also looked at last night. So to coming to understand the nature of suffering, one will want to know what the cause of suffering is, and we looked at that in some detail last night when we spoke about karma and afflictions, or the second noble truth, that of true origins. And to abandon this, one practices or develops the true paths within one's continuum. One practices the Buddha Dharma and gives rise to realizations or true paths in one's continuum. And this leads to liberation liberation from suffering. So for those of you who were here last night and you're hearing this again, I sincerely hope you're not too bored. But there is certainly benefit for yourselves to hear this again. But there are people, many people here now who weren't here last night, and I think it's good that they hear this too. So please forgive me for repeating some of what you heard last night. When one comes to understand the nature of suffering in a powerful manner, one will go for protection to the three jewels. Having done that, especially with this motivation of having understood suffering, one goes for refuge knowing that the way the three jewels will protect one is through studying the Buddha Dharma and meditating on the Buddha Dharma through practicing. And in this way, through doing so repeatedly over a sustained period, we ourselves will all actually become Sangha jewels and eventually become part of the Buddha jewel as well. So going for refuge, this is the starting point, and going for refuge or going for protection to the three jewels arises from understanding suffering. And this is the starting point of the Buddha's path.
So the
meditation here, we contemplate on the three jewels. We've heard tonight a description of what each of the jewels are, and we do so to generate conviction that they have the ability to protect us. So through developing these qualities within ourselves, turning towards them, this has the ability to protect us from suffering. Reflecting on the three jewels and giving rise to a mind of conviction that they have the ability to protect us, for this mind to have strength and strength to actually have an impact on our way of thinking and our behavior, we here then secondly engage in a meditation on suffering. So we think about suffering in three parts. We think about the situation in the world, and this we know well from what we observe. We think about the suffering in terms of interpersonal relationships, between interpersonal relationships, and then thirdly, in terms of ourselves as individuals. And here we think about firstly our body, secondly our mind. And but in both cases, while sometimes we feel okay physically or mentally, we're quite happy, but from the smallest of causes, that situation is lost, and we physically become ill or experience some pain, or maybe we become severely ill. And similarly, when we're in a good mood, we just need to see someone we don't like and immediately our good mood is lost. Or we hear a sound we don't like, maybe scratching on a board, some kind of sound we don't like, or the neighbor's dog barking, and our good mood is lost. So, thinking in this way, we come to see that there is no stable happiness to be found anywhere within samsara. And there's no ordinary method, no worldly method that can be employed to attain lasting happiness. Otherwise, beings would have done this by now. People would have gone to the shop and bought lasting happiness. So this is the second point in the meditation, reflecting on the suffering of samsara. So this meditation is something, because we've heard now, this is really the starting point. This is what will propel us to go for refuge with sincerity. So this is something we need to do repeatedly over a sustained period, in the morning, in the evening, whenever we have time. I'm coming to the realization of suffering. Of course, the wish is not to experience this anymore. So we think, so where does our suffering come from? And it comes from our own minds, our own way of thinking, particularly these afflicted minds. That is where our suffering comes from. And again, there's no worldly method for abandoning these, for eliminating these. So thinking, having thought about suffering and where suffering that arises from, the origin of suffering, these afflicted minds, one then comes to a point in one's meditation where one can go in one of two directions. So we'll look at the first direction that one may choose to go in, and that is in the paths of the Mahayana. So at this point, the meditator will think to herself, this is my situation right now. I have come to understand that I am pervading. pervaded by suffering, samsara is pervaded by suffering, there is no happiness, no lasting happiness to be found within samsara. And this is true for my situation, but not only for me. It's the truth for each and every other suffering sentient being. And all sentient beings, without exception, are just like me in wanting to experience only happiness and not wanting to experience even a moment of suffering. But they are suffering in the same way as I am, due to their own afflicted minds leading them to engage in negative activities and accumulating contaminated karma. So we are all in exactly the same position. And then this person who has the wish to go in the direction of the Mahayana will reflect that all these sentient beings, since beginningless lifetimes until now, we have at various times have had a relationship of a mother and child with them. And in these rebirths, they have shown us directly tremendous kindness. And in limitless other rebirths, they have also shown us kindness in other roles. Thinking, reflecting then on the kindness that each and every suffering sentient being has shown us, the strong wish to will arise within one to repay that kindness, and this then leads to the meditations on love and compassion. And then, this we looked at in some detail a few nights ago, so we just mentioned it briefly now, but eventually this meditation leads one to the point where one takes responsibility for the welfare of all sentient beings, where one sees that their lack of happiness and their situation where they are pervaded by suffering, that situation that they're in right now, to free them from that is my responsibility. When one takes responsibility, one then says, to free them from suffering, I need to become the most skilled of guides. I need to attain enlightenment and become a Buddha, so I can be the most skilled of guides. And then the yogi in the meditation has given rise to the mind of bodhicitta. Because here she's taking responsibility to liberate all beings from suffering and do so through the attainment of enlightenment. So this then it becomes a meditation of the Mahayana. So now in meditation, the meditator has given rise to the mind of enlightenment, to bodhicitta. Then the reflection moves on to what are the activities that now I should engage in so as to fulfill this commitment that I've made, this commitment to lead all beings to a state free from suffering, to a state of lasting happiness, the state of enlightenment. Well, these are six practices. Firstly, the practice of generosity. If one engages in the mental development of the wish to give, and then engages in such activities. We heard about these six in detail yesterday afternoon. The second then is ethical conduct, guarding, this is the mind of not harming others. And here one engages, ensures that one doesn't harm others through physical activity, verbal activity, or even one's way of thinking. And thirdly is the practice of patience. So this is a mind that remains calm and gentle and spacious in the face of adversity. So that's the third practice. Then fourthly is the mind of joyous perseverance. So this is the mind that delights in engaging in virtuous activities. And fifthly is concentration, the mind of single-pointed concentration. And sixthly is wisdom realizing emptiness. So these we looked at in some detail yesterday, but these are the practices that a being who has given rise to bodhicitta engages in. And they do so with the motivation to free all sentient beings without exception from suffering and lead them to a state of lasting happiness, the state of enlightenment. So we
looked at the refuge verse. So we've looked at the first couple of lines. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. Then the verse continues. So the one we recite before teachings is a little different from the one we would regularly recite. So I'm referring to the one that we usually recite. And that has as a third line, by the merits I create through practicing generosity and so forth, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. So this third and fourth line is exactly what we're talking about here in the meditation. So by the merits I create through practicing generosity and so forth. Then this refers to generosity, ethical conduct, patience, choice, perseverance, concentration, and wisdom. And one is engaging in these activities so as to benefit beings, and to do so, to become a Buddha in order to lead them to such a state. And that is the meaning of these last two lines in the refuge verse. By the merits I create, the practicing generosity and so forth, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. So this refuge verse is something that has tremendous meaning and tremendous power.
Before all teachings, such as today and every other teaching, we recite this refuge verse three times. So the purpose of reciting it is so that we can turn our mind to the meaning, and that's important. So hopefully many times in the future you'll have the opportunity to come to teachings and you will recite this refuge verse. If you have then been in your meditation practice, been meditating in the way that has been described tonight, then due to familiarity with these topics, when you recite, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly, immediately the qualities and or the meaning of the Buddha jewel, the Dharma jewel, and the Sangha jewel arises in one's mind, as well as the wish to be freed from suffering and thereby go for refuge, go for protection to the three jewels. And then moving on to the second half,
By the merits I create through in the teaching context, through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. We remind ourselves that we are here to receive teachings in order to become a Buddha for the sake of others. So here, every time we come to teachings, we should generate this motivation first of refuge, that it's through developing the Buddha Dharma within ourselves that we will attain freedom from suffering, liberation from suffering, and our motivation for doing this is to be of greatest benefit to others, and our method is receiving teachings, is practicing generosity, and so forth. So that is the meaning of this verse, and if you meditate well on these steps we've covered tonight, just reciting this verse 3 times will be sufficient time for the meaning to arise in one's mind and arise with power, with impact. So we've heard here about the path of a being who aspires for the Mahayana Dharma, a being who aspires to become a bodhisattva and progress towards full enlightenment for the sake of all beings. So such a practitioner is marked by the strength of their mind, the power of their mind, because they take on responsibility for the welfare of each and every single sentient being, not just their loved ones, those they care about, but each and every sentient being without exception. So this is one method, or one route, one path. This, we heard a few moments ago about there is a choice where one can go in one direction or another direction. So the second direction that a practitioner chooses to go into is along the Tibetan paths. So their practice starts out in exactly the same way, where they're meditating on the nature of suffering, on the sufferings of samsara in great detail, and come to the understanding that there's no peace to be found anywhere in samsara. They see that the world in general is pervaded by suffering. Individual relationships are pervaded by suffering, as are we as individuals, our physical and mental aggregates. And they give rise then to the strong wish to abandon the situation, to be liberated from this situation. And they then too look for what the cause of their suffering is, and they also see it's these afflicted minds. Generate then a strong wish to abandon the afflicted minds. So here, the paths are exactly the same up to this point. There is no divergence. But where the divergence comes then is at the next step. So the being of the Mahayana persuasion, the being who aspires to enter the Mahayana paths and become a bodhisattva, such a being then sees the suffering of all sentient beings and takes responsibility to free all beings from suffering. The being of the Theravada persuasion similarly sees that all sentient beings are suffering, trapped in the same way that they are suffering. They too are controlled by their afflicted minds. These lead to the accumulation of contaminated karma, and they continue to suffer. So they see this too, and they will certainly have compassion for the suffering of others. But the difference comes in terms of taking responsibility to free all sentient beings now. They may well have the wish to help others, but their wish to be liberated from suffering is so strong that they will feel, first, I want to be liberated from suffering. Then I'll be a more skilled guide, and then I can help others. So they then decide to strive for their own individual liberation, and thereafter they will help. The being of the Mahayana persuasion will also strive for enlightenment, as opposed to individual liberation, but their motivation is to do it for others, because others have to be freed from suffering, and freeing others from suffering is their primary motivation. But back to the being of the Theravadan path. So they make the decision, I'm going to strive to be liberated from suffering. I'm going to strive for nirvana. And how am I going to do that? It's the same six practices we've heard about: generosity, ethical conduct, patience, joy, perseverance, concentration, and wisdom. So the practices are the same. The difference is motivation. The difference is the motivation. And the being who has given rise to the motivation of the Mahayana is striving in those same practices, but in order to become a Buddha to help all sentient beings, each and every one without exception. So such a practitioner then has an incredibly powerful mind. Hence, strength of mind is what differentiates a practitioner of the Mahayana paths from one of the Theravadan paths. And then a second difference would be a practitioner of the Mahayana paths strives to overcome the self-cherishing mind and develop the other-cherishing mind, the mind that cherishes others more so than oneself. So that's the difference between these two paths, as well as where these two paths diverge. And other than these two directions, there is no other route to attain liberation from suffering. There are only these two paths. So what we've been discussing here is the sutra presentation. And this presentation is exactly the basis that all those who receive an initiation now need to have reflected on. So they too need to reflect on the nature of suffering and give rise to an overpowering wish to be free of suffering, to be liberated from suffering. And then following from this wish, they need to have given rise to the determination to abandon all their afflicted minds, minds of anger and desire and jealousy and pride, and abandon them completely. Moreover, they need to have come to the understanding that not only are they suffering like this, but so too is each and every other sentient being trapped within cyclic existence. And their suffering is, and their liberation from suffering is my individual responsibility. And therefore, I will strive to become a Buddha, to benefit others. So in other words, they then also need to generate the mind and bodhicitta, and going along with this, meditate on emptiness. So this is what we've been covering all week, and we've looked at in an abbreviated form tonight. And that is exactly the meditation that practitioners of Tantra need to engage in, so as to be able to engage in tantric practice.
然后就能够一本就是说的前面也算大的但甚至他们这个古城就是你不能忙忙忙接但哪让你也扩化了照顾是不是算大的那你们也接那就往学习那边也接要忙的。
So we heard about where the path diverges, and one strives either for the become a bodhisattva on the Mahayana paths, or for one's individual liberation through the Theravadan paths. So such a being does not receive initiations and engage in the practice of Tantra. So those striving for their own liberation alone, they do not engage in Tantric practice.
Maybe after. 다진이게 코드 중화 삼다 제대 타고 우선제 삼다 이네게 삼다에 안다 제가 지구 메시아 선제 탐지기 전에 세기 선제 탐지 중화 세기 선제 탐지기 뒤에 두기 예전에 다니고 와서지 세비 삼다 노제네 삼다시다 이네 삼다 세비 제 대한주기 지비냐메 지 주주 수기 세바 공부 세비 삼기 세비 이네 삼다 이거 아니네 이네 야
So just to summarize then what we've looked at this afternoon. So this meditation that I've presented here, the starting point is to meditate on suffering in great detail so that the strong wish arises within oneself to be freed of suffering. And this comes from understanding that there is no happiness, no lasting, stable happiness to be found within samsara. And then, with this wish to be free of suffering, one with sincerity goes for protection to the three jewels, goes for refuge to the three jewels. Then one should, in one's meditation, turn to the situation of all sentient beings. All those beings, our loved ones at home, all those in society around us, those who are humans and non-humans, all sentient beings are in the same situation as us, as wanting to experience only happiness, yet experience problem after problem, difficulty after difficulty. And each sentient being is trapped in the same way by their own afflicted minds. And almost all of them do not realize this. They do not even understand the nature of suffering. They do not understand that wherever they are born, they will suffer. Whatever they achieve in this life, they will continue to suffer. And therefore, thereby one generates powerful compassion for the ignorance that is blinding suffering beings, or generates powerful compassion for the suffering that these beings are experiencing due to their ignorance, and generates the wish taking responsibility to lead them to a state where they're freed from this ignorance, freed from suffering completely, and in this way generates the mind of bodhicitta. And then lastly, one then engages in the meditation on the practices of the bodhisattva, the practices of generosity, ethical conduct, patience, joyous perseverance, concentration, and the wisdom realizing emptiness. So that in brief is the meditation we've looked at this afternoon, which is again a summary of what we've looked at over the week. So the more you repeat this meditation, more powerfully it will arise within your mind. Because this word meditation can be equally translated as habituation or familiarity or cultivation. So the more one develops habituation to this way of thinking, the stronger these minds will become within one. They'll become habits. One will start to think in this way, in a habitual manner. And this comes from not doing this meditation now and again, but repeatedly over a sustained period. So if one can, do the meditation every morning. And if one can, then also repeat it in the evening. And what makes a big difference is if in the day, when you have literally a moment here and there, remind yourself of the conclusion that you came to in your meditation. The suffering of samsara, or the wish to free all beings from suffering, to lead all beings to enlightenment. Just remind yourself, so as to reset your motivation. And in this way, one's meditation will grow in strength, and one will start to see a change in our way of thinking, a change in our way of interacting with others. And this will further inspire us in our practice, and we will do so knowing that the attainment of our final goal, the goal of Buddhahood, the state where we can be of greatest benefit to others, is rapidly approaching. So we'll finish here for now. So if there's some questions, then please do ask.
I might be stating the obvious, but especially said that Theravada practitioners are meditating every day. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Okay. So is the reason that Theravada practitioners don't practice Tantra, because is that because they don't develop the mind of enlightenment? Yeah. Dini Dekmemba Konso Nak Namjiki Made, Dini Gyutin De Konso Jansuki Sem Kegi Made, Gyutin De Rebe. Yes, that is correct. So because they don't even think about it or meditate on it or try to cultivate it, they don't practice Tantra. The reason that one has to have a bodhicitta, or at least aspire towards development of bodhicitta to practice Tantra, is the tantric path is more powerful than the sutra path, and thereby one achieves enlightenment more quickly. So those on the bodhisattva path are the ones striving for enlightenment. Those on the Theravada path are not striving for enlightenment. So they're not going to engage in a practice that brings the results that they're not aiming for. They're rather aiming for individual liberation. So therefore, someone who has a strong wish to attain enlightenment for the sake of others as quickly as possible will want to engage in tantric practice, and thereby will receive initiation and practice Tantra. Okay. No, thank you. We'll stop here for now. Thank you.